You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Gangs, gang violence, drugs, and organised crime. We're seeing a lot of this in the headlines recently, and a lot of fear surrounding gangs in Aotearoa is perhaps one reason why politicians are keen to flex their political muscle, introducing increasingly punitive laws. However, recent research has shown these laws haven't worked in the past whenever there was a media frenzy about gang violence. I spoke to Dr. Jared Gilbert, a sociologist from the University of Canterbury, about this.
Well, it started in 1996 in a situation remarkably similar to what we've got now, actually, and that was that gangs were at war. Two protagonists in Christchurch, and then when that died away, another one sparked up in Invercargill. And this created, this was before the 1996 election, and it fired the politicians up, and they created numerous laws that they put in place to target the gangs. And what I did is looked at how often those laws have been used and how they've been used. And what we can see is that the vast majority of them were unworkable. And those that were used against non-gang members, i.e. the public generally, far, far more often than gang members. So they were hopeless. And I think we can conclude from that 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 policy agenda was more about garnering votes ahead of election than it was a serious attempt to counter the gang issues. And I would bet anything you like that this will occur again, and undoubtedly with the same outcomes.
Well, it does sound very familiar, because in the recent 2022 budget, the government announced an extra $600 million to tackle gangs. This included funding for police to directly target them. Was this out of a genuine concern for public safety, or is it kind of an attempt to prove they're not soft on crime?
Look, the public have every right to be concerned when people are brazenly firing shots into houses and down public streets. That is a concern. But none of the laws that were brought in last time solved those issues. And the reason for that, at least in part, is these are, despite what seems instinctive, these are very complex issues, and tackling them is going to require some real thinking and some real research, two things that politicians don't do well. In fact, the introduction to the swathe of laws that came around and that were first proposed in 1996, the introductory note to the bill said there was no independent research to verify any of this. Well, there still isn't. And so politicians are basically floundering around in the dark with a candlelight when they need to turn on some big torches to really see what the situation. Otherwise, what we're doing is, it's a sop to the public. It's a way of saying, hey, we're doing something, don't worry about it, but not actually tackling the problem. The slight problem there is that ever since 1972, when Norman Kirk, in opposition, promised to take the bikes off the bikies again before an election, and never did it. Ever since, there's been a lot of talk on the hustings. It garners a lot of votes. Thus, politicians say it is successful, but thus far has not been successful in countering the issues of gangs.
Some people have proposed introducing anti-consorting and anti-bikie laws here, but critics have said that these laws only work to drive gangs further underground. Do you think politicians would seriously consider introducing those kinds of laws here?
Well, they have been introduced in Australia, right? So, mind you, Australia is a pretty different country, but in so many ways. But, yeah, look, they could be introduced here, I think. They have been tried to a small degree in Whanganui back in, I think, maybe around 2009, something like that, I can't actually recall. And there were some real rights-based issues there. They ended up falling over. But at the time, actually, some in the police came out, in the organised crime squad, said, hang on a second, why are we taking patches off our crooks? Because if all criminals self-identified, it makes our life much easier. The head of the gang unit at the time actually said, well, you know, patches allow the public at least to make some decisions about how they'll behave, and that might be avoid them. For example, when you remove those identifiers, you don't remove the problems, you just remove the identifiers. So in America, for example, if you think of the Blood and Crip type gangs, they don't wear back patches, but they sure as heck associated with violence. So they just drive the gangs underground and make them a little difficult to spot. And it's very unlikely to solve the problems of the gangs.
Recently, National MP Simeon Brown tried to introduce a bill that would ban government funds going to gangs. This was in response to Jacinda Ardern approving millions of dollars going towards a mongrel mob-led rehabilitation program. The bill was described by other MPs as just dog whistling to a very narrow, often racist voter base. So why are gangs such an easy target when it comes to anti-crime rhetoric?
Yeah, that was a trust that was running a drug and alcohol rehabilitation program. And so it wasn't really giving money to the mongrel mob per se, but, you know, that those types of things are a bit lost in the rhetoric. But I tell you, it does raise a broader issue here, actually. And that is, when we talk about gang, we're ostensibly talking about men in patches who are part of these fraternities. But in reality, we're actually talking about men with wives and with kids and with uncles and with aunties. And we also know that disproportionately these groups exist in Māori communities. So when we've got an acute focus, quite rightly in my view, on trying to extricate Māori from these types of issues, ill-defined laws that target these communities could create some real problems for Māori. And so we need to make sure that laws that are poorly drafted don't actually create more harm than good. You know, there's a balance here, right? The gangs are causing issues. No one's saying that they don't need to be addressed, but firebrand politics from the hustings is unlikely to be a great way forward.
Finally, many media outlets are reporting an increased number of gang-related violent incidents, including involving firearms. This mirrors a similar media frenzy about organised crime back in the 90s, like you laid out in your research. What impact does the media have on the general public's perception of gangs?
Look, it's really significant. It's really significant. For example, you know, you would think that gangs are the most significant problem facing New Zealand, given the amount of column inches that are given to them. But if you look, even just look at family violence, you know, one every 5 weeks, a toddler in New Zealand is killed within the home. That doesn't get half the attention that it needs to, because it's not just the horrific circumstances which end these little kids' lives, but for each one that's killed, you know, on average, one every 5 weeks, for each one of those, there are scores that grow up beaten and scarred physically and emotionally. And those kids don't go on to become journalists or academics or doctors or lawyers. They end up populating our prisons. That is a far bigger issue, far bigger issue. In fact, they populate the gangs. So, you know, and so we talk and we talk and we talk and we talk about gangs. Now, they are an issue, but by goodness, it's not proportionate to other concerns around law and order, not by a long shot.
That was sociologist Dr. Jared Gilbert speaking to me about New Zealand's war on gangs.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.